alone with you, remembering years ago we spent together. Yesterday is today, and tomorrow too. I have dreamed myself into this life, and soon my dreams will bring you back. Today's karma will bring tomorrow's light, which will shine on the path that others walk. How long will Sam have lived if Isis died? What was on Cameron's mind the night he cried? Could his daughter's sorrow make him realize the pyramid's mighty tale would mark the end of time? Many years of yesterday and a hundred more today only make us realize the eons of tomorrow. And when we finally meet this one and sigh away the breezes, eternity begins. Somehow long ago, few memories remain. 10,000 slaves, night and day, their thoughts on this endless trial began to shape our boundless minds and channel us back into the soil. Here's to the land with you. As I gaze upon the past, I realize you have dreamed. The sands of time are shifting still, and as my gaze catches yours, that looks to me the same, I realize the spirit cry makes us both remain in this curtain of energy's spray, whose mists become the rain.
Well, there you go again. Whose mists become the rain. This should be the topic for a show, I think. This is Dr. Fred Bell, and welcome once again to the Dr. Fred Bell Health Energy Science Show. That was Frauke Bell performing one of the old poems. Matter of fact, I wrote that poem. That's from Atlantis Rising, by the way, the album. I wrote that poem back in, when was that? 1972, after I'd had a contact with Sannyasi that very day. I think I wrote that in the following evening, because it had to do with remembering things from the past and remembering. I remember a lot of times, I remembered it seemed like past lifetimes with her, far beyond the past lifetimes that I remember in this world, like the one I had in the Third Reich, the last one, and the one before that, probably in the time of Jesse James, and another one before that, around the time of the Captain HMS Victory and Lord Nelson, or Sir Lord Nelson, and all the ones I do remember, many, many lifetimes. And it has to do, once again, the last two shows, if you remember, had to do with the subject of the human aura. And first we talked about the aura of the earth and the effect of HARP on it. That was show number 6. And then show number 7 was the interface of the human aura and the personality. We talked about how the aura is formed by the minerals and electrolytes in the body and how those further formulate energy fields around the aura. And the aura then builds up our own individual auric frequency, which is signified by our fingerprints. And then we discovered that if we came in contact with another human being with an aura frequency similar or dissimilar to ours, we had a feedback, which we call a personality, which started the creation of karma. And then we said if we have a third person walk up on the scene, or maybe person number 2 had a child, we have 3, now we have a nation, or a dharmic personality. So we have dharma, we create a nation, 3 or more. And so today we're going to talk about transference of aura. And I remember a long time ago, and this is where reincarnation on past lives, which was at one time a sequential, now it's not a sequential it's a parallel existence now, but people are not understanding that. That's why we feel like we've been in more than one place at once sometimes, but that's a whole other show. Also, some of the topics in my new book, Inside Track, those things are covered. But anyway, today we're talking about the aura and past lives. And I remember when I was in high school, for a little short time, I never actually finished, so I finished it in the military, but one of the government programs, but I used to hypnotize the entire class. So I hypnotized a senior and junior class simultaneously when I was in Pleasant Plains, which is a small school, on a school bus one day. It was kind of interesting, and I could easily take people and regress them back into their past lives. And so that got, you know, I'd studied the original hypnotist around in the 30s and 40s was a guy named Bridie Murphy, and I had studied Bridie Murphy's work quite extensively. And when Steven Eberbaugh and I were my high school buddy, or actually junior high school buddy, when we were together a lot, we were doing a lot of work with past life regressions, and we were also hooking electrodes to our brains to notice the brainwave frequency changes during these regressive times. So by the time I had gotten into high school, we had made a lot of progress on this type of work. And of course, this is back in the 50s when things were wide open. The field was wide open. A lot more is known about it now than there was then. But I haven't really discovered a whole lot more recently than I learned then, actually. And so in auric transference, when you start working with a person that's of like consciousness, you have a huge auric transference occurring, a very large. It's quite an interesting phenomenon, to say the least. And when I had spoken to Sumyasi, we had talked about it several times, and she'd actually shown me how that transference worked. And she then began to teach me about how they communicate back and forth in the Pleiades. For example, you know, radios don't work. Radios are not a working thing. They're not an option with Pleiadian spacecraft travel, simply because radio frequencies are RF signals, that type of ionized radiation, not ionizing, but ionized radiation, is limited to the speed of light, which is 186,273 miles per second, last count. So with that limitation, what happens is if a spaceship travels in multiples of the speed of light, it's really not going to have much of an effect. It's not going to have much of an effect trying to send a signal to something that's going faster than the signal itself. As you probably know, when we hams radio operators, we bounce signals off the moon. It takes a few seconds. You know, when you skip something off the moon, there's a special channel. It's a 1200 megahertz channel that's assigned to ham radio just for that, because it's a very short wavelength, and when the moon is in the line of sight, it makes a very good target for bouncing radio signals back and forth and communicating that way, which is kind of fun. So anyway, she began to teach me. She says the way to communicate. Now this is the positive side of the aura. Last week was kind of the negative side of it. She said the way to communicate is through the aura. And she says she's the one that taught me about the fingerprint, how the fingerprints work and the signature of the fingerprints, which we talked about in the last. If you remember correctly, I had said that. The humans, when the soul of the incarnating being comes to the pregnant female, what happens is the fetus then absorbs that energy into the iron atoms of the iron molecules of the and atoms of the bloodstream, which then causes a frequency, an auric fingerprint frequency, which then of course sets up the tempo for the aura itself, which then registers on the fingertips and the bottoms of the feet, because these are. Basically, if you were to look at the aura across the human body, it would be almost like a figure eight, with the crossing point of the figure eight being the solar plexus, the top part of the figure eight being the crown chakra, and the bottom feet part of the figure eight would be the bottoms of the feet. And then if you extend your hands out or up, they would join the crown chakra if you put your hands up over your head. So basically, you would imagine the figure eight with your hands over your head in a circle. And therefore, at the crown chakra, the fingertips would be part of the emanating to make that pattern complete itself. It would be, if you held the arms out as a cross in the middle of your body, you would be extending the crown chakra field out to your fingertips. So basically, the crest of the two energies coming from the both hands peeks itself out when your hands are directly above you. And that's always a starting point, I might say, in Kundalini Yoga. You always start with your hands above your head and move the energy down through the body and down to the feet. So it's always started that way. So you're bringing the crown chakras down through the solar plexus to the bottom of your feet. And, of course, there's a miniature version of that in the body that medical science has found, and that's forming a figure eight with the center of the figure eight not being in the solar plexus area, but the center of the figure eight being in the throat chakra. And, of course, the crossing point in the throat chakra would be the thyroid gland, color green, emerald receptor, remember. So you have a miniature miniature figure eights from the head down to the top of the solar plexus, which is called the hypothalamus. And then you've got the big one, which is from the top of the head all the way down to the feet, which doesn't really have a name. We call it the human aura and the sphere of the influence of the aura. So what happens is we look at that, and then, of course, the energy is coming out of your fingertips, or your feet have formed this fingerprint, which is a characteristic of your soul. And so people often say, well, what about that person? Can you recognize fingerprints throughout history? And the answer is yes, you actually can find patterns. There will be some deviation from one to another, but we haven't really gotten into looking at fingerprints from people from one body to the next. We haven't actually gone that route in a minute. Secondly, the problem would be you need to have the fingerprints. You'd have to keep some bodies around to do the fingerprint analysis off of, so that's not too possible. But the fingerprints do go with you from life to life. But, of course, remember this. Each experience in life is going to cause an auric deviation because you're going to have a karmic interface with other human beings. Some human beings in different lives repetitively, and others are brand new, increasing your holographic world. So there are going to be deviations and changes caused by that. So obviously there's going to be a variation. But there are special patterns that can be found, which are relating to what we call the five seed atoms, or the core nature of the soul, which of course is another discussion at some other later time. So anyway, Sannyasi, I asked her, I said, well, let's just say we have two spaceships, and they're going to dematerialize from two different points of the universe, and they're coming back to the Pleiades. Let's say they're going to come into one of the capital cities of Era, like Rion, for example. So if they're coming into Rion, and let's say they were materializing so far out, because from this one is coming, say, from Alpha Centauri, another one is coming from Proxima Centauri, and they're coming to the same from two different places, but they're coming to the same place. How do we know they don't materialize and crash into each other in the same point? You know, and she says that that's actually happened. It's kind of like a freak accident, and rarely happens, but it has happened. So, what they have is they have their equivalent to our highway patrol or your state trooper. She said, depending on what state you're in. And I says, well, what do you mean? She says, well, we have communicative devices that allow us to set up a set of parameters, and we send them to a central place, and the central place lets us know that the spacecraft, when they come into this area, which one is coming where and what the parameters of that particular frequency and vibration are. So we set up our energy curtain frequencies to compensate for this. So we could come into the same place, but maybe seconds apart, and then make a move motion. So they have these different things they do, and she's explaining all this, and I'm not going to get into it now, but it was real interesting, because I actually thought the highway patrol kind of like ended here on Earth, but nope, they got them up there too. They don't go out and give tickets, obviously, but they do have a coordination sequence that they go through. And I said to her, well, how do they do that? How do you do that? She says, it's done by auric control. She says the female is usually the pilot or the director of the force in the spaceship. That's they chose the female. I says, why not the males? She says, well, the females have a more concentrated and a more consistent aura. Men have a tendency to flip around, jump around, even in Pleiadian men. She says, women can be pretty well trained, easier trained, and that's what they do. And I was thinking about that. Yeah, we have a few female pilots too. One I actually knew that started out in Air California as a stewardess and worked up to becoming an Air California pilot, which was pretty amazing. She was an amazing pilot. And I've flown with a lot of women in regular planes, and they are probably better than I am, at least more consistent. I might be a little more daring, but they're a lot more stabilized, because I want to do all kinds of stupid things in an airplane, and they have a tendency to just go up and so let's just go flying and not grandstanding attitude. So I sort of related to what she said. I thought that was kind of neat. And I said, well, how do you do that? And she says, well, the aura, and of course we've already talked about the aura, and she was then explaining to me how the aura works. Actually, the Pleiadians oftentimes trap me into a scientific understanding of something by just exactly that means, getting my curiosity up more than anything else, because some of this stuff's pretty boring, but in this case it wasn't. So she said, we have this device, and it works like this, and she describes it. It's a small little thing, and it picks up on the horizontal and vertical frequencies of the aura. And I says, oh, it's kind of like an X or a cross. First I sort of saw it as a cross, then I sort of saw it as an X. And then when she began to explain how the yin frequencies and the yang frequencies crossed in the center, I sort of visualized, this is before, by the way, this is before we had a nuclear receptor. So I began to visualize this thing, and I visualized it as a vertical line going up and down, and then another vertical line crossing it going east and west with a small curve, maybe a 30-degree curve to it. And then I imagined myself out in front of this cross, which is not really a straight cross like a set of jacks, for example, the times we used to bounce a ball and get in the cracker jacks, but kind of a curved, interesting-looking form. And then I began to realize yin and yang. Okay, well, what if we took pyramids? And if I took a bunch of pyramids and made a cross out of pyramids, sort of like the irradiators that we make, which we already had the irradiator, that was the first radiating device. Well, I made a radiator with a cross in it versus an irradiator column as we now have and we now market. And she said, yeah, that would work. And so what I began to visualize was seven pyramids going straight up with a slight bend to them vertically, and then seven pyramids, pyramid number four being this center of three above and three below, another arm going right and left, and three more pyramids going each way. So it actually, you had seven pyramids going up and seven pyramids going across, intersecting at the middle. And then she began to explain that energy will cause, a focused field out front. It becomes conformational with the human aura. And if you want to interchange with a human aura, you have to block that off. So I realized, yeah, that's like the irradiator. So I realized that wire, if you look at the irradiator, and I'll be posting these up on blog very soon, these pictures. If you look at the back, you can see them on our website. You see the back part of the irradiators, it has a wire, a stainless steel wire, and that captures the energy from going out and sends it forward. And so the Firestar orb came into creation as a result of that conversation and a little bit of research, a little more input from her. And what it does is it's a big, tall structure with a wire going down the back of these pyramids going vertically and a wire going back across the horizontal pyramid, so it forms a cross in the back of the wire. Of course, there's wires in the front to hold the tension. And then at each end, there's obviously four ends to this middle cross, this cross device. Inside that, we put a pyramid right side up and a pyramid upside down, forming an octahedral chamber. Plus, there's one in the center. So there's five chambers, one in the center and one on each end of the arms. And what we found out from research with her is that inside these chambers, we placed, in the beginning, nothing, but now what we do is we put inside there, because the technology, when we develop things, things get more and more advanced. And so, and we learn more. So we put the small nuclear receptors in each one of the centers of all five of those chambers. And the nuclear receptors are pointed, so they all face you. So when you stand in front of this big device, which looks like a cross, only we turn it sideways, that's the way it works, you'll see that there are four chambers in it, each with a receptor in it facing at you. So the whole thing focuses directly at you, and you stand in front of it. And then what we did is we learned that, to work with the human aura, when you start working with communication devices, as the Pleiadians do, communication deals with the chakras themselves. The person that's commanding that ship and making contact with the central landing crew, the highway patrol or the control center or mission control, whatever we want to call it, also has a similar communicating device to their auric frequencies. These are called signature devices. So there is a signature device for the pilot, there's a signature device for the controller, and they communicate telepathically, equivalent of, because that's instantaneous. I would call it telepathy. It's a little bit more, I think, sophisticated than that, because it's like you become electromechanical partially. in your training. You know, there's an electromechanical side, and it sounds a little strange for humans, but I think there's a few people out there listening that know exactly what I'm talking about, and you just have to accept that we have our abilities to do those kinds of things, and we develop those skills in those areas, and we might seem a little strange to people that are undeveloped, and it feels a little uncomfortable, but eventually get used to it. You know, something you can turn off and on, and that's what kind of what the Pleiadians do. They turn it off and on. So, having developed this faculty, this energy field, this what they do, they're able to communicate back and forth, and these little devices that they have sort of increase their ability. And they also have the equivalent of something like a nuclear receptor, which they also wear from time to time. So they're not above and beyond that, even though they have a much less stressful and much less polluted environment. So the Firestar was developed as a result of that, as a communicative device. And what we do is, you know, our human side, what we do with them is we muscle test the person that's going to get one of these things for five different chakra frequencies. Five, your strongest color to, you know, this actually your weakest color to your strongest color. And we put your very weakest color right in the center of the fire star. And starting with the upper right arm, we start with the second weakest, then we go to the lower right arm, that's the next weakest, and then the left arm bottom is the next weakest, and the top arm is the weakest of the five. I mean, the next weakest out. So you're starting from a weak point and going progressively stronger. And this creates a clockwise field of strength and a counterclockwise field of weakness. So it creates a number eight spiral around it, and it transmits the aura. And what happens is, when you work with one of these things, once we muscle tested you, when we put gemstones in the center of each one of these receptor devices that are in there, we also, let's say on the center you had a ruby in the center because you were weak in your pituitary gland, and your next one up was an amethyst, and that was the next weakest gland, your sexual. And then let's say the next area was your heart, which was a sapphire, and the next area was an emerald, which is your throat, and the final area of weakness was gold, so that was your solar plexus. So we put a citrine or some golden stone, gold sapphire in there. Then we have a bunch of stones that we bring from all over the world. These are stones that we've tumbled that come from vortexes from all over the world, and there's like 50 or 100 different variations of colors. And so we put corresponding stones inside the fire star along the pathways of energy channels. So you have this huge, massive device now with these not only gemstones in it, but these other semi-precious stones in it that amplify the energy fields even more and connect them even more. So what we're doing is we're taking your weakest areas and we're making them your strongest areas, so that when you telepathically want to link up to someone or transmit energy to someone, all of the colors and stones are there. They're all there in sequence to what your body needs. And usually your body won't migrate too much from that. You'll probably change frequencies and colors, but the same basic device seems to last people for years and years and years. You might want to change it out after 10 years, go for another fire star, but they're pretty, they last a long time. And then what we do is with the gemstones, we enhance the energy with the astral frequencies. You know, by doing that is we shoot lasers into it. The laser beam, in the way that the laser beam works, it is a device that brings photons down from the astral plane. The earlier lasers were based on stimulating an atom inside of a ruby rod into a particular frequency and sending out a bunch of waves to one end of this crystal rod. And, of course, a mirror on one end would reflect these waves back to the mirror on the other end, so which would have a heavier surface coating, like say 10x versus 5x. And so these mirrors, this 5 times surface coated mirror and this 10x surface coated mirror, start bouncing back and forth, until the energy gets so great that it finally breaks through the one of the weakest mirrors, which would be the 5 times surface coated mirror, with tremendous energy, because it took a lot of velocity and energy to build up momentum and build up enough mass to break through an actual physical coated mirror surface. And this emanation of this is coming from the astral plane, and these are called photons. So photons are units of energy that come out of a laser, and the science of the photons coming out is called chromodynamics. That's the actual physics term, chromodynamics. And within these protons are other particles called omegons. And omegons give us colors. They are particles of energy that when are interpreted by our brains as a reflection off of something, we interpret the reflection of the photons, and that interpretation gives us the seven colors and the seven blends of colors, which could be millions of colors, but it's off basic seven colors. So when you're applying this chromodynamic energy into a fire star via a laser, you have a chromodynamic and an astral doorway effect. So you're actually opening up the doorway to the astral plane as well as amplifying your aura on the physical plane. So when you open up the door to the astral plane, it connects all points simultaneously. Astral plane does that. So now there's no more a speed of light. The speed of light has now been transcended, and you can instantly communicate anywhere within the astral plane, which is any place. And seeing as all creatures of life have an astral body, it makes the perfect vehicle to hook up to. So that's basically the operation of the fire star. And then, we miniaturized a version of it. For some people, we make a small version of it, which came much years later called a microstar. And the microstar is a little phase-shifting device. And if you look at the Pyridyn website, you will see a lot of the microstar's ability. You'll see it shifting phase, shifting time. And we can actually photogenically capture some of these little traits that these devices do. We haven't really photographed a fire star that much because when we got into the microstar technology, that's when our digital skills got developed, and we really haven't gone back and taken pictures of fire stars that much, which at some point we will, because they are incredibly spectacular when they do their time shifting. So just imagine yourself sitting in front of one of these things and going into some meditative state. And one of the ways to start with is when I'll set one of these up on the wall somewhere, and they hang off your wall, and they lean down. These are giant things, and they face you because they're over 6 feet wide and 6 feet tall, these big arms that open up. So you rub your hands together very quickly, just rub them together and breathe like a couple fire breaths, and then you open your palms out and aim them towards the fire star. Immediately you will feel a cool vibration coming onto your hands, and it will just hit your body and just slam you back. Fire is the kundalini system in the body, and the neurons and the things that are necessary to make that system work are instantaneously transformed into a huge auric frequency that goes all across space and time. I remember a lot of people, when we started making these things, fire stars, and shipping them to people, a lot of people had a huge myriad of experiences. I remember, for example, well, I was working with a lady named Valentina Vargas, who was an actress. She lived up there. Her boyfriend was a guy named David Tickle, who I referred to from time to time, one of my record producer friends, who has a museum of all my first creations, of things I made in the very beginning, and he kept the original articles. But she was training. She was had a vocal trainer, and she was training, and she would stand up. She had a fire star, and of course people customized their fire stars. She liked the Native American Indians, so she put feathers in them and all kinds of little things to warm the device up, and it helped her vocally. Her teacher her music teacher was teaching her how to raise her octave range on her voice, and he found that, and he was not into the New Age stuff at all, but he found that because of her, the fire star seemed to do something to make her voice work a lot better than when she practiced in front of it versus when she didn't. And, you know, remember, music itself is a communicative skill, so what not a better place to stand to practice your music skills in front of a communicating device that's an auric amplifier. And so her teacher had another student by the name of Barbara Streisand, who's an eternal student, and Barbara hadn't been... This was just before Barbara's last tour of many years ago, about 10 years ago, I guess, the last time she went on tour, late 80s, mid-80s. And so he noticed that what it did, so he took the fire star over to Barbara and had her try it. And she was amazed by it. And just imagine this very conservative Jewish lady standing in front of a fire star, which is a Palladian device, already a world-famous singer, and opening up her energies to it and finding that she had gotten some blockage in her upper octaves that was serious because she hadn't been singing for quite a while. And this thing actually helped her get over the blockage. So that was an interesting application of the fire star. Then we had another thing start to happen with them. We sold several of them around the country and actually began to sell them around the world. And pretty much everyone that we put up with a person that was using it for a communicative device, a lot of people wanted to become contactees. And so we began to train people about auric amplification, because when you want to become a contactee, a couple of things have to happen. One is that you need to be open to releasing your frequencies. In other words, when you have your thoughts and your energies inside of you, you need to be open to letting them go, letting them go out into the universe, not just walking around with a containment of them, but actually turning them loose to the universe. So you have to have a willingness to let them go. And number two, you have to be a surrender. You have to surrender to this willingness to make contact with someone else. You have to be open to getting feedback from what you're releasing. So these are a couple of mindsets that are pretty much important. And I actually think in the physical training that goes with it, which is stretching, kundalini yoga, running, exercise, those kinds of things, keeping your body quite limber so that your body circuits are working, because remember, your aura is being created in your brain, but the more limber your body is and the better off that you feel and the better your health and your vitality levels are, the better your aura frequency is going to be. And remember last week we spoke about the negatives of having drugs like cocaine, putting too much electricity in your body and overloading certain circuits, causing blockages, which then causes whiteouts or brownouts or whatever you want to call them, which interpreted as a hole in your aura. That kind of stuff. So we're just completely now on the opposite of that. We're suggesting no meat in the system while this work is being done. We're suggesting that you really have a good vibration. Even the clothes that you wear when you're working around a fire star are important. You wouldn't want to wear a lot of plastics or synthetics, because they're going to pick up a lot of static electricity that's going to block what you're trying to do. So all of these things, even the room that you put the fire star in, should be a dedicated room, just like our quad systems and other things. Because you're putting out this much time and effort for a project, you might as well have a room or a space dedicated to get the maximum benefit from it. I wouldn't just stick it in any old room. I would have a special room. So when you start working with these things, all these transformations start to happen. So the first thing that began to happen is that a lot of the people that were working with the fire stars started having sightings around their buildings and in their houses and that. And so it became quite common. And even the people that didn't want to be contactees would be told that there was something flying over their house by a neighbor or something. We got a lot of feedback that way. So finally we decided, well, you know, we tell people that it appears to be a symptom. So the next big wake-up call that I had was I was playing a concert. I think I mentioned this in one of my earlier deals, but I was playing a concert over in Europe, and I had the fire star set up on stage with a couple of giant lasers. They had an audience of 500 in Marnau in Germany, and it was late at night, about 11 o'clock, and three Pleiadian ships came down, and of course the Air Force, the Swiss and German Air Force, started chasing them, and the whole town got cordoned off. So that was the major sighting with the activation of a fire star right during a concert. And I've had a few other concerts like that where similar things happen, minus the flamboyance of the military and the police showing up. So these things began to happen. So finally I sold one to one of my German distributors. I was building them over in Europe. I was living over there at the time. And I sold one of these fire stars to this German friend of mine who was one of my distributors. Actually, he's the guy that I did Galactic Meditation. I don't know if you've listened to that one yet, but that's one of my albums that we sell off my website, which was composed of with Werner Ahrens and myself. He used 19 different sets of Japanese bowls, and I used Pleiadian spaceship sounds and a Korg synthesizer for that, or a D50, I forget which one I used. Anyway, when I first met Werner, he put a fire star up in his healing center up in Hamburg, Germany, and I told him, I says, usually what happens is it takes about 3 months, about 90 days, to have a sighting around your fire star. But because it takes time to get the local nature spirits lined up in frequency, the building up in frequency, because when you put one of these things up and you start working with it, it affects the molecules. Remember, I think I mentioned earlier that when your body gives off amino acids when you're in a room, And these amino acids go into the wall, or they get impregnated into the wall. And if a spirit, and when you sanctify, as you sanctify the area, raise the frequency up high enough, it allows a higher spiritual force. In some cases, if it's a lower spiritual force, it could be, a haunted house, and the ectoplasm from people living there would be appearing as a ghost. Or you could do like we do here with the quad systems. We activate the energy above the vortex, which is three stories up in my house, up on the top of it there. And, of course, then we have angels materializing for short periods of time, which we photograph. And I've got pictures of that, I think, on my website. And so when we start, so Werner started doing all this at his place, and he got a little impatient. Some of my distributors are a little impatient. He happened to be one of them. So he starts calling me around 80 days, claiming he hadn't seen anything yet, nor had his neighbors or anything else. And he was wondering, was I just making this up, or is this real? I said, just keep working with it. I said, 90 days. I didn't say 80. So about 85 days, he called me again, and still nothing. Well, what happened is, though, on the 90th day, I was visiting a friend of mine's apartment, my Munich distributor, his apartment, Johannes Fisslinger was his name, and we were there at his place, and Werner bangs on the door. He came, had driven down from Hamburg, and he comes running in with a tape. And he says, Fred, this is amazing. Look at this tape. So we put the tape on, and what we saw was an Autobahn, a guy in a video camera, or somebody in a video camera driving down the freeway, filming a flying saucer. And there was, what was different was that this was about a 5-minute video of a ship, and the ship was going exactly where the car is. And what happened was the guy in the car was going to Werner's house, his ashram, his teaching center. And the ship evidently was going there too. So we filmed it all the way up to Werner's house, including hovering over his house before it took off. And it's in PAL, which is the German version of NTSC, a code here to show this on a tape. So I have this tape here still. And here's the ship. And Werner had brought me the video. And he was a happy camper because he says, yep. He says, we saw the ship. We filmed it. And it was the 90th day. And I says, yeah, you timed it right on the money there. It could have been 91. But with you, it was 90. So it was really interesting seeing the fire star work that way at that point in time. Well, the microstar orb, which was something that, which is a miniature amplifier of the human aura, was another device. And a lot of psychics and people that do readings wanted to, some of them would have their fire stars at home, but that's way too big. So if they were doing readings, for example, in their house, then the fire star would be perfect for them because they could utilize it in the house with their client. But some people travel and move around, so they on their own, I didn't tell them this is what this was for, on their own found that the microstar, when it came along, which is a miniature version of it, same five chakras, same five little gemstones, but it fits inside of a small traveling case that we give people with. It comes with a little case, comes with a little portable laser that goes inside. It's really cute. You set it up on your office or on your desk or on your bed or wherever you want to, put the little laser on it. You just let it fill your room, your body with energy. You stand in front of it and you meditate with it, just like you do the big one, except it's a little one. And it works quite well. And the psychics all over the world, you're using them today. It's a very popular device. And as far as sightings, there's been a few sightings. Now, what's really interesting about sightings is that one of my clients was a guy by the name of Eric von Däniken. And Eric von Däniken wrote a book called Chariots of Fire and whole lot of books back in the 60s and 70s, and he became world famous for his writings. Well, down in Mallorca, which is an island off the coast of Spain, he once a year has a contactee series of seminars. And of course, he's never bought a microstar, but I've never been to one of his seminars, but my friends have, and they say he won't even begin to work without having this fire star orb set up. So he has one, and he sets it up, and he does his whole meditation and his teaching trip down there in the summertime in Europe using a fire star. So I thought that was pretty neat. There's other applications. I remember David Tickle, he had a place up in Calabasas. And one afternoon he called me. He had three fire stars in his studio. He didn't have one. He had three. One of them was Valentina's, his girlfriend at the time, and two others are custom ones that he had made for different color frequencies. He was a real fire star collector, actually. I remember he was working for Interscope Records, and he called me up in the afternoon, and this is about a $10,000 the day production they're doing up there. It's not cheap. And one of his fire starters had fallen off the wall and broken. And he says, "You got to drive up." And I says, "You know, David's 100 miles away from Laguna, and I didn't really want to go there, but he's my friend." So he called me and says, "We're stopped production." I says, "Well, what do you mean you stopped production? I mean, you don't need a broken fire star. It's not going to, you record all the time without it." He says, "Yeah, but this particular album, it's got the vibe on it, and we can't do it right, and the girls, meaning the band, can't feel it right, and you got to come up here and fix it." So reluctantly, I packed up my repair kit and drove 100 miles to Calabasas from Laguna, and proceeded to repair. I left in the morning and didn't have the thing fixed till about 11 o'clock at night. It took about 4 hours of work to fix it, and I had to bring some spare pyramids and things for it, and glue and all the things that we put them back together with, and the wire and tools. And so I got the thing back up, and they got recording. And about 11 o'clock, he was working with a group called the Four Non-Blondes, meaning they weren't blonde, I guess. And I guess they became pretty famous from their records. This is their first one. So the three of them are outside. It's at night. We're in Calabasas. He's inside working with a guitar player because sometimes they have to do an individual track recording. And we tried to get Dave, but we felt something was going to happen. We felt an energy coming out of those fire stars, three of them. The girls even felt them. And David wouldn't come out, but what happened was a very small flying saucer, very detailed, came flying right down out of the sky, hovered right over the studio for a few seconds, maybe 20, 30 seconds, half a minute. And, I mean, great detail. This was not very far away. It was in great detail. And three of the four non-blondes, and I'm sure if you ever go to one of their concerts, and we'll never forgot that experience. Got to see a spaceship up close and personal. So that was pretty interesting. So we've had a lot of fun with the Firestar. It also, you know, we have another device that goes with it that came later. We found that when you sit on the ground in the lotus position and look up about 30-degree angle into the center of the fire star, that there's also an energy that comes down from the fire star, hits your different chakras, and bounces up behind you. So we developed a reflecting device that goes behind you, which is called a back shield reflector. And what it does is it captures the energy that would normally go through your solar plexus and bounce off behind you and go off into space. It sends it back, so it's like a V-shaped field. So if you imagine to the left, you've got a wall. To the right, to the center, would be where you're sitting. And to the right is this this device. And imagine that on a square 8.5 by 11 piece of paper. You put at the bottom of the paper, in the middle, is where you're sitting. And halfway to the left on the paper, on the far edge, halfway up, is the fire star. And straight across from that is on the right, would be the reflector, and you draw a line between the reflector on the right to the person sitting on the bottom to the fire star on the left. You have a perfect V, and it forms a V-shaped reflection. And actually, when I got to mapping it out, I said, "Well, let's call this an inverted sign, and we'll just look at the energy coming from the back shield reflector to the person back up to the fire star." So the back shield reflector is positioned high up on the wall, about halfway up the wall to the ceiling as a fire star, and you're on the floor, so you're below both of them. So this shape is actually forming half a scalar wave. And if you imagine it to have a top, it would form a scalar wave. So you're basically sitting inside of a scalar wave, which made me realize, well, a scalar wave is free of space, and it's free of time and free in space. So if it's free of time and free in space, that means that you're actually in an envelope, and you can actually transmute and go somewhere in this thing. This is actually going somewhere to communicate. Why can't you go with it? So what we found is that if you take two people and sit them opposite one another on the floor, and have them look into each other's eyes, and do sitting in the lotus position, and do a fire breathing exercise, and look left eye to left eye, which then creates in the fire breathing exercise what's called a solar, that you can actually astral travel with someone using a fire star. And so we introduced that out into the world, and that seems to work quite well too. People can actually, if you get one or two or more people in a group sitting between the shield and the fire star, especially with a couple of lasers on late in the evening, maybe a candle or two in the room, you can easily do some very amazing astral traveling. So that became another attribute of the fire star. So, going back to the human aura, it's neat to know that you can amplify the human aura. You can, with something like a fire star, it's neat to know that when you get into it and you start meditating with it, you don't just have to, consciously go out and meet an alien or something, or contact with them. You can do deities, you can communicate with higher beings in many realms by just concentrating on the frequency and the color and the sound that you want. Now, I've been creating a lot of sounds for a lot of years in my music albums, and I also like to create frequencies to work with fire stars, and I can actually, if I'm putting a fire star, installing a fire star somebody's house or their place where they live or their personal space, I can actually create sounds to go with that person for their mission to with that device, because some people just want, past life regressions, people do those in the presence of it. There's so many things you can do, because you're now, remember, auric amplification. And the point, when you start amplifying your aura, you can, when you start projecting yourself into it, into the envelope or the bosom of a scalar wave, it becomes quite an amazing device. I have one client that bought a fire star. He's not a wealthy person, but he's a consistent person. His name is Joe Randazzo. He lives up in Victoria, Canada, up above Washington there, and Washington State. And he bought a fire star from me at least 15 or 18 years ago. And he dedicated his whole room, a whole room in his house to it. And so he went out and got himself a great big giant luxurious chair that vibrates and goes in different positions, put it in a room where you can close off all outside light. And actually, last count, I think he had like 18 or 19 lasers in there and master crystals all around and the fire star and special music. So he gets in his chair and looks directly at the fire star, tunes in the music that he uses for that, turns on all these lasers, like 20 of them. I think he's got maybe 20 now. All different colors, even the violet laser, which is incredibly hard to find anymore. And so every year he always adds something to it. And he takes off. And I've had, actually, Joe is nice enough. He's had people, I've had people that were interested in his systems and really experiencing the fire star. So Joe is available. People have flown into his place from all over the world to experience his fire star. And if you want more information on him, you can reach us at 1-800-729-2603 at Paradigm, and get more information on Joe's phone number and go see him if you want. Also, with the human aura, we're starting to find now, because of the projector technology, that even though it's a hologram, it's holographic, it does have a profound effect on interfacing the human aura into the hologram of ourselves. The aura frequencies, of course, vary on everybody. And what I used to do in the old days, I used to love to photograph humans. I used to develop a camera. It was Krillian photography. And this camera, what I would do is I would have you put your hand inside of a little bag, a little black bag where it's light, there's no light in there. And of course, you'd be touching a Polaroid film with a high voltage Krillian camera attached to it. And I'd have people think first I would have them think nothing. Usually we would get a little round spot on all five of their fingers and thumb. And then I would have them think a very positive thought. And when they would think a very positive thought, the aura would emanate tremendously, and we get a picture of that. Then I would have them think a negative thought, and it would create an absolute horrible-looking collapsed fingerprint. With a positive thought, the ring of fire around the finger became elliptical, and the aura, the center of the aura, was still there, but it would go up an inch or two depending on how flexible a person was. And then a negative thought, the aura would be barely around their fingertips, almost to become nothing. And people that could do good, had good emotional control, could demonstrate this quite well. And so this showed us the actual way, how much of the pulsing, and so if you're sitting there and you're working and you're getting excited, your aura frequency is going to be pulsing. And, it's like in electricity. You could have a motor that works on 110 volts. But if you want to get a lot of power out of this motor, it is not having 110 volts of electricity. You need to have many, many amps available. And as you put a load on the motors, in other words, you hook the motor to a generator, and the generator is feeding light bulbs. The generator, as it feeds more light bulbs, is harder to turn. So the motor has to work harder and put out more ergs of energy. They're called ERGs, ergs, to create energy into this generator, which then puts out electricity for the light to make the lights work. The same thing happens with the human aura. In some kinds of work, just like in physical exercise, you have to really exert yourself to get a huge output of your aura frequency. In other words, you need to develop a lot of current. You might be getting the voltage out of it, but you need to really push this aura frequency out, maybe for healing methods, remote healing, for example, or communication to across great distances with many things, many people, or maybe just the general huge, powerful meditation that takes more and more current. What we found is when people are able to have these kinds of meditations, when they connect themselves up with something like the Fire Star, it almost makes this heavy work almost effortless, because rather than you have to be the generator and the transmitter, you just have to be the instigator, and the Fire Star becomes the generator and the transmitter. So all you have to do is that gives you more energy and time and space to become more clear, to clarify your vision more, to focus your vision more. And through this clarity, you'll achieve much more power with a lot less exertion. And you'll find that with less exertion, you get a much more influence, a much more cause, a much more effect out there when you start doing things with your aura frequencies. And of course, you can do spontaneous things like, you know, the phone rings, you pretty much know who's calling. That kind of stuff becomes automatic. And as a matter of fact, when you start working with something like the aura amplifier of the Fire Star, the Micro Star, when you call someone else, they're going to know you're calling. Believe me, they won't, even if they don't have any psi abilities, and it's not a commonplace thing for them to know who's calling them. When you call, they'll know it. So those are some of the kinds of things that we really enjoy doing with this type of technology. The aura, you know, as we get further and further into aura studies, working with animals is a lot of fun, especially birds. Now, birds can see your aura way better. They see auras all the time, and your aura, like if you're raising a parrot like I am or several, when you're down, you walk in the house and your energy, your aura frequency is down, it's collapsed, it's weak because you've been out there with a lot of short-circuited auras anyway, and it's been draining you, the bird will pick up on it. I mean, those birds are any animal. A dog will pick up on it. The birds are really animated, and so they'll get very quiet. They won't say anything because they know that you're down and they don't want to get involved. They're smart. But then if you come in and you've been having a great day and you've been out exercising or meeting great friends, and you come in and you're charged up, you can come in the house totally charged and silent, and those birds will just explode. They will just start making all kinds of racket and having a good time because they can sense it. So in general, animals can sense your aura frequencies. And so if you're out in the woods, for example, studying nature or communicating with animals, you can play around with your aura by amplifying it. And this is, of course, on an individual level, this is where the nuclear receptor comes in, because once you have the right receptor on your body, your aura is hugely influenced. Of course, the most influential and highly visible auric amplifier on a personal level is the amethyst nuclear receptor. And a lot of times when people are going through relationship changes, I tell them, especially divorces, I say, you know, the amethyst receptor will really get rid of the negative people in your life in a nice way and really bring in the positive people, because the aura is such that when you exude a violet, a lot of violet in the color, which the amethyst amplifies, it attracts and repels relationships. Things that are going to drain you go away, and things that are going to raise your energy are going to come towards you. So you'll have a whole complete change of venue when you use the amethyst. Now that's sort of like using the aura as the receptor as an amulet. The amulets have been around for a long time, and I mentioned those in some of my other dissertations that I've done. And the amethyst is one of the most amazing stones, and pretty much the most affordable of all the gemstones too. Although it is only have the hardness of 7, so you have to be careful, especially when you get into these larger 1-2 carat amethysts that are cut in passative, they break quite easily. They'll shatter. So you don't want to do that. Now, another thing that's really interesting is networking. If we have done that with a few people with Firestars, if you want to really get something done, get something, you know, you want to get rid of HARP or make the environment better, using a Firestar for those kinds of purposes are very good because it's a meditation enhancer, and networking is very good. Now, also, networking doesn't mean that you need a whole bunch of Firestars. Networking is often done in clinics. We have several meditation centers and yoga centers around the world that will purchase a Firestar, and they'll tune it to what we call neutral frequencies. We make one up that's pretty much across the border. Everybody gets in front of it. Everybody's going to have an experience thing. And so everybody starts using it. Each person comes in with their own maybe personal crystals and things attached to their aura frequencies. But they all sit in front of it and use it as a group or use it individually and have a group purpose. It works very well for that. And any of you people that get into this type of work that have a center that you want to link your center to other centers, just give us a call over at Paradigm or send us an email. As far as questions going this week, I don't think I saw any questions. Last week we covered the questions and answers in the very beginning. I don't remember seeing any questions on the email, although it does seem like we have more and more listeners coming on board. And all of you that are out there listening to my show and the other shows that are on blog, we welcome you. Hopefully you'll listen to us more, rant and rave on these solo missions more and more and enjoy it more and more. What's going to be happening is pretty soon we're going to start doing some live things, but as I was explaining to Don, the commander of Blog and Service, anyway, I told him that I know he's done some live shows. Now, I will wait until I have a large audience and I get to know the audience so that we can have feedback and call-ins and all the things that are necessary so that the shows become effective. To me, right now, we don't have a wide enough variety of listeners on the airwaves yet to start doing any of these live shows. But, I mean, in the future, you can count on it. And also, of course, when we start doing television, that will be a visual as well as an audio presentation. So that should be pretty good. So any of you that do have questions, you can feel free to email me at fredbell, that's F-R-E-D-B-E-L-L, at paradigm.com. Paradigm's being spelled P-Y-R-A-D-Y-N-E. And, of course, you can always look me up on the search engines, any Google or A9 or MSN, any of the search engines that you use, just type in Dr. Fred Bell, and that's all. And then it'll take you right to the website, and all of the things that I do and have done and am doing are all readily available and readily observable at these different points across the Internet waves. The last thing I want to sort of in closing with, as far as the work with the human aura, is communication across to the other side. I know there's some of you out there like to do that kind of work, someone that's recently passed over to the other side. And depending on how toxic or non-toxic their aura was when they left, if, for example, it's a smoker, they're harder to reach. If it's a non-smoker that was fairly disciplined in their etiquette and things they put in their body and exercise and all those kinds of things, they're quite easy to reach. And if you remember, the ability to reach anybody was finally proven by Harry Houdini and his wife Bess when Houdini had given her a code or word that he would speak from the other side through a medium, whoever she ever found a medium. And of course, when she gave up and finally found a Catholic priest who spontaneously made an effort to reach him and came up with a code word that kind of verified that this was possible. That's kind of basic, but that's the way it goes. Now, people that are on the other side that you want to reach, it's quite easy what you need to do with the Firestar if you're using it for that. It's not a one-night stand. It's a thing that you need to set up over a period of time. You need to set up candles, incense, sanctify the room. It takes a little bit of time to get the energy right. It might take you a week or even a month to do something like that. And then also you might even want to have a tape recorder handy, because sometimes you get some information that's so vivid and so powerful that you might want to tape it. And it's, you know, when you work with a Firestar for any of these kinds of things, tape recorders are nice to have. If you use a lot of incense, you might even want to have a camera nearby because you might be able to photograph some kind of entity coming in. As far as negative stuff, always keep a star orb in the building that you're working with. You won't have any negative energies. The frequency and the dynamic of a fire star orb are such that negative entities are disharmonious or discordal. Frequencies typically don't hang around these things. They have a tendency to leave. Insects don't get near them. Flies don't get near them. Butterflies love them. Cats love them. So animals can sense them quite easily. But overall, they're a lot of fun. It's fun to build them. It's fun to get them installed. Sometimes I even go out and install them myself because this is one of my favorite toys to play with, basically, because it's so effective, and I love seeing what happens to people when they work with them 6 or 8 or 9 months. It does change their life. So once again, if you have any questions, send them out to me, and thanks for listening to The Insanity of Dr. Fred Bell, Health, Science, and Energy Show. And that concludes show number 8, and we'll hang around and wait for show number 9, see what that's going to be about. Talk to you later. Bye.
You have been listening to a Blog In Broadcasting service, a service to others' endeavor. Thank you very much, and good night.